for a second a few questions. And I not answer them out loud, but think to yourself how you would answer these and fill in the blanks. People are unhappy and unfulfilled in their lives because they lack blank. People fail to make real lasting changes in their lives because they lack blank. People destroy the lives of the ones they love the most because they lack blank. People who love God and have righteous intentions will be lost because they lack blank. The Apostle Paul was given one opportunity to preach to the Roman governor Felix, and it was recorded in Acts chapter 24. And you may remember what he talked to him about. Acts 24, verse 25. As he reasoned about righteousness, self-control, and the judgment to come, Felix was afraid and answered, "Go away for now, for when I have a convenient time, I will call for you." Paul had told him, you know, what was right and about his accountability toward God and his need for self-control. What I want to talk about this evening is self-control. You could answer each one of these questions with the same answer. So that's getting at here. Each one of these could be answered, you know, with the term self-control. So it is something that is absolutely very important that we have in our lives. It is absolutely important, and it needs to be developed properly. Our lives can be better in almost every way if it is applied, and when it is missing, our lives are made much more difficult and unfulfilling. How organized we are in our lives is a result of self-control. How disorganized we are in our life is also a result of lack of self-control. If we suffer from addiction or bad habits, it correlates to self-control. Our reputation as one who keeps their promises or somebody that can be counted on, you know, depends on our self-control. The development of a good work ethic, our ability to earn a wage can be determined by a level of self-control. In fact, there are many types of jobs out there that you have to be a self-starter, is the way that it would be labeled. There's not somebody that's going to be looking over you. A lot of sales jobs are that way, that you maybe have a home office or something. Somebody that is not self-controlled can't really do well in those things because they need somebody to control them. They cannot control themselves. Controlling our tongues, maintaining healthy relationships, all these things require self-control. Our outlook on life is generally, you know, influenced by our self-control. So it's really hard to overemphasize how this affects us and the impact that personal discipline has in our daily living. It's mentioned many times in Proverbs, as we'll see in our study through Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 16, verse 32 says, "He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty. He who rules his spirit than he who takes a city." And so when we think of self-control, we naturally think about that. We think about anger, but it really comes into play in so many different areas of our life, not just there. One of the things that seems to be real trendy right now is superfood. And I haven't really figured out what superfood is, except it doesn't usually taste good. But, Chick-fil-A has the superfood side, and it's green, so that's a warning right there. But when you eat it, it's actually, you know, pretty good. So there's something that's really, really healthy in there. And I guess it's just got concentrated super things that are really going to be good for you and not be a lot of calories. And so when we think about those kind of things, we know that it's something that's supposed to be good for us, whether or not we know what it is. And when we think about the fruits of the Spirit and what they are, I've heard self-control be identified as the super fruit, that this is the one that really controls a lot of the other ones. And if you can embody self-control, it takes care of a lot of the other things. And we'll see that as we talk here for a minute. So in Galatians chapter 5, Galatians chapter 5, Paul says, "Now the works of the flesh are evident, which are adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lewdness, idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, dissensions, heresies, envy, murders, drunkenness, revelries, and the like, of which I tell you beforehand, just as I told you in time past, that those that practice such things will not inherit the kingdom of God." And so, obviously, those are not the things that we are to do. We have these two lists that Paul gives us that are really opposed to one another, seem to be. But not only are they opposed to each other, the fruits of the flesh and the fruits of the Spirit, the works of the flesh and fruits of the Spirit, these things work together. The fruits of the Spirit are going to oppose those things and answer those things. And it goes on, the fruit of the Spirit is joy, love, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such there is no law. So the works of the flesh can be overcome with the fruits of the Spirit. And that's why these two things are listed together. Is here's the ones you're to avoid, and here's the ones that are going to overcome those things that you're to avoid. Read an article where a Bible class teacher was comparing the two lists, the works of the flesh and the fruits of the Spirit, and gave the teenage pupils a list of the works of the flesh and then asked them to name a fruit of the Spirit that can defeat each one of those. And what they returned was this: immorality, that can be combated with self-control. Uncleanness, that can be combated with self-control. Outburst of anger, that can be combated with self-control. And the rest, idolatry, murder, drunkenness, revelries, those can all be overcome, all can be defeated with the fruit of the Spirit, self-control. And of course, there's other fruits of the Spirit which would apply to that as well and could answer the question, but that the application of self-control to each one of those things is very significant. So you can see why we might want to label that as it's the super fruit. It's the one that is necessary to defeat the flesh. So even these young people, they understand the battle we fight with sin is a battle with passions. It's a battle with emotions. It's a battle with our will. And so it prompts the question, you know, what is self-control? And it's one of those things that, you know, it's self-defining. Controlling yourself is the way you define the word, but we can get more fancy with that. It comes in Webster. Webster says, restraint exercised over one's impulses, emotions, and desires. The original Greek term comes from the root word engratēs, which means strong, robust, having power over or possessed of, you know, mastering something, controlling, curbing, or restraining. And so we understand all those words and how they apply to this term. So what it implies is something that is controlled or mastered. And so that's, you knew that before we read these definitions, what self-control was. And so if you want to say it fancier, you can't. But, you know, Peter also talked about self-control, and he placed it on his list as well in 2 Peter chapter 1, verses 5 through 8. But also for this very reason, give all diligence, add to your faith virtue, to virtue knowledge, to knowledge self-control, to self-control perseverance, to perseverance godliness, to godliness brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness love. For if these things are yours and abound, you will be neither barren nor unfruitful in the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. So he sandwiches self-control between knowledge and perseverance. And you kind of get the idea here that self-control is dependent on knowledge. They obviously go hand in hand, suggesting that what you learn requires, you know, being put into practice. And so the things that we learn about the Scriptures, the things that we learn about what God would have us to do, we're going to put those into practice. And then persevering after you are in control of yourself, that means that you've got this foundation for consistent righteousness in your life. So you've got the knowledge, you've got the self-control, and you've got the perseverance, and hopefully, you know, that will give you a steady path to follow in your life. So what are some of the things that we need to control? That could be a pretty long list and be a series in and of itself, but one of the problems is sometimes people don't realize that they're not in control of themselves. They fail to make practical applications in their everyday life. And so what are some of the things that are pretty obvious that we need to be in control of to please God? First of all, we need to be in control of our thoughts. And that's basic and foundational, because it's our thoughts that get us into trouble. You know, if we end up doing something bad, if we end up sinning, it's, you know, we just didn't do it without thinking. We thought about it, and then we acted upon those thoughts. And so does God intend for us to control our thoughts? I think it's pretty obvious that He does. In Matthew chapter 5, the Sermon on the Mount, He taught that the thought of lust in the heart was enough to condemn somebody, to condemn the adulterer even before the act was committed outwardly. So that means that the person that has that intent of lust, that I'm going to lust after this person, and if I have the opportunity, I'm going to take advantage of this situation and act upon that lust. Jesus said, you've already committed adultery in your heart before you even committed the act. And so that's talking about the thoughts being in question. Also in Romans chapter 8 and verse 5, Paul says, "For those who live according to the flesh set their minds on the things of the flesh." That's talking about your thoughts. It's not talking about actions. That's talking about the ones who are following the flesh, who live according to the flesh, their thinking is messed up even before they act. So the things of the Spirit, they need to set their minds on the things of the Spirit instead of the things of the flesh. And so we are responsible for what we set our minds upon. In Philippians chapter 4, verse 6, "Be anxious for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus." Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there's any virtue, if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. So this is talking about what's in your mind. This is talking about your thoughts. Control your thoughts. You need to have self-control of your thoughts. You need to put away evil thoughts and start thinking on things that are not evil. And you know, sometimes we just need to get away from those influences that are going to cause us to think evil things. And the reason that we've talked about in Proverbs, as we did this morning, the wise writer telling us that there's two different paths to take. In one path, there's going to be people enticing you to go and do certain things. What do you need to do? Well, it's implied that you get away from the ones that are enticing you to do those things, because they're not good for you. They're going to put thoughts into your head about doing things that you shouldn't. That's why your parents have always been so upset when their kids will follow after the wrong crowd. So what we're told here is don't follow the wrong crowd, especially in your thoughts. Meditate on things that are good and things that are praiseworthy. Guard your minds and think on certain things. Paul also describes in 2 Corinthians chapter 10 that we are in a spiritual warfare and we bring every thought into submission. I've always liked that passage because it doesn't just talk about the things that you do. It talks about the source of those things. You need to put your thoughts into submission, because that's where everything begins, whether it's good or bad. The world, you know, is saturated with impure thoughts. They're easily accessible, certainly through TV and the internet. And there are a lot of evil things that are much more accessible today than they ever have been in the past. So our thoughts are something that we need to control. Another thing along the same line is our eyes. This is connected to our thoughts, and what we allow our eyes to see produces the thoughts that occupy our hearts. I apologize in advance for using this illustration again, but some of you are new here and haven't heard this before, and I will do it very quickly. But one time we were with Jarrell's parents at a dinner theater in Gatlinburg and paid a lot of money, as you do for everything in Gatlinburg. And there were some singers and dancers up on the stage, and Cheryl was falling asleep at the table. I thought, well, we paid a lot of money for you to have this meal, and you're sitting here asleep, not enjoying the entertainment. But he was doing it on purpose because the girls that were up on the stage were dressed immodestly. And so rather than look at that, he decided to close his eyes. So I found out later, and to my embarrassment, that thought did not occur to me to close my eyes and not watch what was on the stage. But he did. And so that's all. Every time that I, you know, see this in Scripture, I think about Cheryl doing that, you know, falling asleep at the show. And you know, he was applying this principle that we see right here in the Scriptures that was read for us this evening in Luke chapter 11, verse 33. No one, when he has lit a lamp, puts it in a secret place or under a basket, but on a lampstand, and those who come in may see the light. The lamp of the body is the eye. Therefore, when your eye is good, your whole body is also full of light. But when your eye is bad, your body is also full of darkness. Jesus said, what your eyes see, it's very important. Don't be looking at things that you shouldn't be looking at, because the things that go through your eye, what happens is, well, they connect with your brain and may cause you to have evil thoughts. Therefore, take heed that the light which is in you is not darkness. If then your whole body is full of light, having no part dark, the whole body will be full of light, as when the bright shining of the lamp gives you light. So control your thoughts, control your eyes, control your emotions. We many times have a problem because we're prone to lead with our feelings. And that is a very difficult thing for me personally, is to listen to a situation or listen to someone without reacting. And God expects us to control our feelings, especially in not sin. Genesis chapter 4, verses 6 and 7, the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry? Why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door, and its desire is for you, but you should rule over it." So God personally is warning Cain against following his emotions, which Cain did. He followed his emotions, his jealousy and his anger. He was supposed to rule over those things, but he didn't. And you know the result. He killed his brother. Ephesians chapter 4 tells us to be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath, nor give place to the devil. Let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. James chapter 1 tells us to be swift to hear and slow to speak, slow to wrath. For the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. Our emotions need to be brought into subjection. Proverbs chapter 16 says, "He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city." I believe it's something that we all probably understand very well, that when we let our emotions rule us, or when we act upon our emotions hastily, as Cain did, it gets us into trouble. That's an area where we need to exercise self-control and don't react emotionally. Our words are also something that can get us into trouble if they are not controlled. And it's one that's very hard to control. James says that your tongue resembles an untamable beast and a raging wildfire, or a ship without a rudder, or the rudder of a ship. Just think, how often have you regretted your words? I don't know that I could count how many times I've regretted my words. And that's something that we need to think about. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 19 says, "In the multitude of words, sin is not lacking, but he who restrains his lips is wise." When I was working for EBSCO Media, I know that I probably mentioned before, the boss that I had there was in a very difficult position with how many responsibilities she had. But I was always impressed by her restraint when everybody else around her was coming unglued or taking things personally or lashing out at her personally. She was just writing things down and making notes in a very organized and thoughtful way and not taking anything personally. I thought that, you know, she's much better in this position than I would be, because when everybody else around her is out of control, she's the one that's in control. Many people are not in control of their words at all. They're in good control until somebody else is out of control, and then they become just like the person that's around them that's out of control. And we're told to put that off. Paul described the new man as one who doesn't react that way. In Colossians chapter 3, put off all these: anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy language out of your mouth. Do not lie to one another, since you have put off the old man with his deeds. We don't react that way, or should not react that way. Self-control needs to control our words. Also, last on our list here is our bodies. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 3 through 5 says, "For this is the will of God, your sanctification, that you should abstain from sexual immorality, that each of you should know how to possess his own vessel in sanctification and honor, not in passion of lust like the Gentiles who do not know God." So we're told to possess our own vessel. We're told to control ourselves. Control the use of your physical body, especially in regard to sexual behavior. And so Paul talks about this. This argument against sexual immorality is that your body is the temple of God, and we must not allow that to be unclean or unholy, anything that would desecrate the temple. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 13, the body is not for sexual immorality, but is for the Lord, and the Lord for the body. Verse 18 says, "To flee sexual immorality, every sin that a man does is outside the body, but he who commits sexual immorality sins against his own body. Do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have from God, and you are not your own? For you were bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's." So self-control. We need to control our thoughts, our eyes, our emotions, our words, and our body. So how do I regain or maintain self-control in my life? Paul says that's something that we need God's help with. In Romans chapter 8, verse 12, "Therefore, brethren, we are debtors, not to the flesh, to live according to the flesh. But if you live according to the flesh, you will die. But if by the Spirit you put to death the deeds of the body, you will live. For as many as are led by the Spirit of God, these are the sons of God." So what Paul is saying here is not being mystical, but he's telling us simply that we just need to put to death the desires of the flesh through submission to the Spirit of God. Listen to his words, be led by those words, spend time in the Word, as we've talked about before. Spend time in the Word and in prayer. Ask other Christians to hold you accountable. Don't give up. But you can really consider some of the things that we saw in the life of Joseph when we were studying his life in our Bible class. At a very vulnerable age, in a very vulnerable circumstance, Joseph exercised self-control. He mastered his thoughts. He mastered his eyes and his emotions and his body, because he was trying to do the right thing with God's help. So what did he do to make that happen? First of all, we see that Joseph accepted responsibility. We have to accept responsibility for controlling ourselves. Many times we place the blame on others, and you know, whoever it is that triggered us, whoever it is that made us angry or tempted us or whatever, you know, we want to shift the blame. But Joseph didn't do that. Genesis 39, verse 9 says, "Thus he left all that he had," talking about Potiphar, "in Joseph's hands, and did not know what he had except the bread which he ate." Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance, and it came to pass after these things that the master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Look, my master does not know who is with me in the house and has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" So you think about Joseph's background and what had happened to him. He could have, "Well, I'm in this situation because my brothers," and at that point he doesn't realize that his father thinks he's dead. And so he thinks, "Well, my father hasn't even come and looked for me. And, you know, Potiphar, you know, he should not be leaving me in his house all this time with his wife. He's just asking for trouble. Look how beautiful she is. And, you know, I'm just a young man. What does he think is going to happen?" He could have justified in any kind of way, you know, giving in to her. But you see, in his statement, he's taken a responsibility for doing the right thing. "I cannot sin against my master. I cannot sin against God." Self-control is owning the moment here in the life of Joseph. So he's accepting responsibility and said, "I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to commit this wickedness." And he's not focused on anybody else but himself as far as the responsibility goes. The other thing that he attempted to do is to alter his environment. In verse 10, it says, "So it was as he spoke to Joseph day by day that he did not heed her to lie with her, nor to be with her. But it happened about this time when Joseph went in the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was inside, she caught him by his garment, saying, 'Lie with me.' But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside." So what did he do? He recognized his vulnerability in this situation and he fled the scene. And I've often thought, well, what if he had tried to reason with her? You know, "This is no offense to you. You're a really beautiful woman, but, you know, I can't really..." If he had stayed there instead of fleeing, it probably wouldn't have worked out well, and it would have, had more temptation that would have come upon him by you know, standing there and trying to reason with her. And it kind of reminds you of what parents will try to tell their children that are of the age where they're starting to get interested in the opposite sex and they're going out on dates. If you don't want to be tempted, maybe you shouldn't be going and parking in a car in a dark area or going in certain places and wonder, you know, why you're so tempted not to remain pure. Maybe it has something to do with the decisions that you're making or the places that you're going, why that is so difficult. But Joseph recognized that vulnerability and fled the scene. He created separation between him and her, and not sinning was his first priority. Jesus tells, if your hand, you know, sins, cut it off. If you're angry, you know, leave the room. If you're tempted, you know, with wrong thoughts, you know, turn off the computer, change the channel, get out of the situation that you're in that is causing that issue. Alter your environment. You have control of that. You know, there is nobody that is forcing you to watch things or to see things that are impure. And I think about David, you know, being on the rooftop and seeing Bathsheba. Did David have control of you know, accidentally walking by and seeing Bathsheba? Probably not. But he had control of how long he kept looking. He could have looked away, and he didn't. Joseph fled the scene so he wouldn't be tempted. So you can accept responsibility. You can change your environment to maintain self-control in your life. And finally, you can, maybe this should be at the top of the list, but you should acknowledge the presence of God. And Joseph did that. Verse 9, he said, of Genesis 39, "There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me because you are his wife. How then can I do this wickedness and sin against God?" A lot of times in the heat of the moment, people are not thinking about God. They're not thinking about the presence of God. They're not thinking about their responsibility toward God. Joseph constantly recognized that God was watching and that he was accountable to God. And, you know, self-control will be greatly helped by that realization of God in our lives. So, even later in the life of Joseph, as he contemplated, you know, being reunited with his brothers, you know, Joseph, you know, could have sought revenge, but he didn't. He also contemplated that situation with God in view. In Genesis chapter 50, verse 20, it says, "But as for you, you meant evil against me." Him speaking to his brothers, "You meant evil against me, and so now I'm the one that's in power. You remember those dreams that I had? You know, this is all a fulfillment of those dreams. You're here bowing down before me. And you didn't like those dreams so much. And so look what I'm going to do to you now." That would have been the reaction that a person without self-control would have had. But Joseph said God meant it for good in order to bring it about as it is to this day to save many people alive. A glorious reunion there, and just shows the self-control that Joseph had in many situations in his life. So in any temptation, there's impulses to lose control. When that happens, you need to pray. You need to ask for God's perspective. You need to remember the presence of God and use God's strength to stay in control. So true self-control is about submitting our will to God. Galatians chapter 2, verse 20, Paul said, "I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me." Paul turned over all control of his life to Christ. He put himself under God's control. And this really is the ultimate sense of self-control as a fruit of the Spirit, that we need to put our lives totally under God's control. And when we do, you know, things are going to work out. We'll be blessed now. We'll be blessed in eternity. So I hope these things will be a good reminder for us of how we need to exercise self-control in all areas of our life. If we can help you in any way tonight to respond to the invitation, we'd invite you to come while we stand together and sing.
Jesus, but loss is thy heart.